This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and if we got a great show for you tonight, no, we don't. Damn it, the phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, East of the Rockies.
Ace is back and he told you so.
Ace, what's going on, man? It's been a while. Good to hear from you.
Ace is back and he told you so.
You wrecked your DeLorean driving drunk? Oh man, that's not cool. Get an Uber next time. You could have killed somebody.
Ace is back and he told you so.
What do you mean you have to be inebriated to listen to our podcast on your commute? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on?
Ace is back and he told you so.
Rock Soldiers by Fraley's Comet? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Rock Soldiers by short-lived Ace Frehley's solo project, Frehley's Comet. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
Dunkin' Donuts knows it's not easy being a regular, everyday office worker. To prove it, we tried this experiment with Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley.
Beautiful, Ace. But what about the P&L statement?
I'll give you the P&L statement.
We are looking good.
Made for the regular, everyday folks. Delicious iced caramel lattes. America runs on Dunkin'.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching?
I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line, Rico Gnu, with the good news.
No,
Rico, how are you, sir?
Is good.
I'm doing great, man. I'm ready to give you some good news. So in a previous episode, we talked about how Queen was in discussions to sell their music catalog for like $1 billion. So that's crazy talk. So I just wanted to refresh your memory on that. So just keep that in the back of your brain for a second. So we'll get to that later. So this first item, gang, and this is a good item. Let's see how many, you know what that reference is. Probably none is. Anyway, so a university. Okay, hold on. All right. So the University of St. Andrews in 2016, this is science, brother. This fits right in. They developed a mathematical formula for explaining what makes an earworm. Do you know what an earworm is, Scott?
Yeah, that's in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, that thing that crawls out of that dude's ear when he's laying on the ground.
Yes, that is an earworm, but for our purposes,
oh,
it's what happens when a song gets stuck in your head and you just can't get it out. Does it happen to me all the time. Like, for example, like ever since maybe the sun went down today, I've had Buddy Holly by Weezer stuck in my head. Don't ask me why. I think maybe I heard it at the store while I was shopping for, I don't know, but it's been stuck in my head for several hours now. That's an earworm. So the University of St. Andrew developed a mathematical formula for explaining what makes an earworm. According to research there, Researcher Beatty Williams. An earworm possesses five key elements. Science, Scott. So we've got rhythmic repetition, predictability, surprise, melodic potency, and receptiveness. In other words, how the listener feels about the song. So if you like the song, more likely to be an earworm. The formula, they actually made a mathematical formula out of this. So you've got receptiveness plus predictability plus melodic potency plus rhythmic repetition times 1.5 equals an earworm. So the result of this is this is a list of the 20 most addictive earworm songs of all time based on this formula. All right. I don't really want to do all 20 of them, although we could if you want to. You tell me if you want to do all 20 of them.
You know what rhythmic repetition means to me, don't you? It means it's time to go out and buy a new box of Kleenex.
Wee.
Let's not do the whole list, Rico.
Let's do the top 10 and really the top 5, okay? So, number 10, Who Let the Dogs Out? How about that, right? So number 10 is Who Let the Dogs Out?
Yeah, what was the name of those dudes?
That's by the Baja Men, released in 2000.
That's right.
Who Let the Dogs Out? Number 9, Jingle Bells by James Pierpont in 1857.
Dude.
Jingle Bells.
Rico, just about any Christmas song, holy hell, that time of year, they're like stuck in your brain. They get stuck in my brain like off times.
Which one gets stuck in your brain the most, you think?
Well, the weather outside is frightful. The fire is so delightful. Blah, 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 blah. That one.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, baby. All right. So, yeah, Jingle Bells, number 9. Number 8. Oh, Live It on a Prayer. Can you believe that? That's number 8 all time. Living on a Prayer. Talk box. It's because it's got a talk box in it.
You know, dude, my daughter, when I was taking her to school before school let out a couple years ago, my 12-year-old, you know what she was singing in the back seat?
I'm scared to ask.
Shot through the heart and you're to blame. You give love a bad name.
Ready?
So the Bon Jovi songs, man.
Okay.
You know what that is, my friend?
What's that?
That's fucking Desmond Child, who was like the king of the earworm.
Yeah, yeah.
He wrote every song for everybody in the 80s.
Number 7, I'm assuming you looked at the list, but just pretend that you didn't. Can you guess what number 7 is?
I don't have to pretend. I looked at your notes, but I didn't go to the list.
Okay, that's even better that you didn't look at the list. Okay, it's the final countdown.
Can you believe?
Yeah, number 7, man, Europe, final countdown, 1986. Stunning that's number 7. Hey, earworm, though. No, how do you feel about the guitar solo in that where he's like doing I think he's doing like that pick tap kind of a thing. You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
You like the guitar solo in that?
You know what? I haven't heard it in a long time, so honestly, I couldn't tell you. I haven't heard the song, but my kids know that song too. You got to realize they're young, and this would be like you and I knowing songs that came out in the 1940s when we were their age.
Yeah, like
you know what
like
I mean.
Us listening to Glenn Miller, right? Like in the movie by Glenn Miller.
I mean, that's wild, right? But they know all this stuff.
It's ridiculous. Hey, these guys have really good hair. I'm looking at the cover of their album. Their hair is very nicely done, by the way.
Europe.
Yeah. Here we go. Number 6, Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh yeah.
Number 6. Are you surprised it's not higher on the list?
Well, no, that sounds about right. It definitely is an earworm and has earworm parts. You could pick the opera part or the slow piano beginning, the rocking out part, but it's also a long and super involved and complex, you know, composition. So when you think earworm, you usually think like your mathematics, you know, repetition, simplicity, that kind of thing.
Right, right. So are you surprised that it's this high on the list? Because of it being so long and complex, let's reverse it.
Well, we've talked Queen many times, and I think it's because the goddamn song has been beat into our brains since it came out. It's never gone away.
It's not an earworm. It's a hammer. It's a nail that's been hammered into our ear. Number five. Beow, 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 beow. YMCA.
Beow, 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 oh, yeah. Beow.
Can you sing that song without doing the YMCA dance?
I can't. Oh, no. And I do it when I'm at the ball game with the family. I do it and everybody wants to run from me.
Okay. So which character, if you had to choose to be one of the characters, would you be like the Judas Priest character or the cop or the construction worker or the
cowboy? Can't be the Native American anymore.
No, you can't. That's politically incorrect.
We have to retire that one.
I think I might be the cowboy dude. Like that. What do you I mean, him or the construction guy? I think I don't know.
I'm going full Rob Halford. I'm gonna wear
nice attaboy, attaboy. But you gotta grow, you gotta do the handlebar mustache though.
I'm working on it.
Nice, good job. Number four, the Proclaimers. You know that song? Well, I will walk 500 miles and then number four, dude. That's when I wake up and I know I'm gonna be. It's dude, we all know it.
Yep.
It's a great song, right?
Yep.
Do we know any of their other songs, though?
No.
That's the big question.
No.
They would be a one-hit wonder, but a huge hit, though. 1987. Sure. Album is Hollywood Soundtrack by the Proclaimers. 1987. Doesn't it feel later than that came out?
It felt earlier to me. So maybe, you know.
There's another song that came out in 1987 that we're going to talk about tonight, by the way.
Hey now.
Number three. We are the champions, my friend.
Well, wait, I don't know what I live in Cleveland. I've never heard that song.
Yeah. very true. Very well, once in 2019, in 2016, Father's Day. What a good day. But yeah, only once though. Queen. So they've got two in the top six so far. Number two, Pharrell Williams, Happy. You like that song?
Because and I only know Happy by the Rolling Stones. How does this one go?
Because I'm happy. Clapping,
oh, yeah.
Happy. Did you know, there's a fun fact about this song. You know, Pharrell Williams is a really great songwriter, and he sang this song. But did you know that he wrote this song for CeeLo Green to sing? You know CeeLo Green, and CeeLo Green turned him down. Not sure why. Giant mistake on his part. In fact, he had a little bit of trouble down the road sometime. But he wrote the song for CeeLo Green. CeeLo Green turned it down, so he sung it himself. And now it's number two. And now it's number two on the list. 2013. The album is called Happy. It won a Grammy for Best Pop Solo Performance. And number one, what do you think number one is?
All time,
I'll give you a hint. 1977 is when it was released.
77, all time earworm. We've already had Queen twice.
Now, this is science, don't forget.
This is science. 77. So, I'm gonna say Beat on the Brat by the Ramones.
Scott Save the Queen by Sex Pistols. No, it's not. It's Buddy, you a boy, make a big noise playing in
of course.
Street, gonna be a big man someday. We Will Rock You by Queen. So now Queen has three of the top six all-time earworms according to science. So does that make their entire catalog worth one big fat $1 billion?
Maybe you found the answer, our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter. With this is the kind of journalism that's missing in the podcast universe, and you're bringing it, man. I think you figured out why the catalog is valued at $1 billion.
Clearly that's the reason. I mean, when you have three of the top six earworms of all time, according to St. Andrews or whatever the hell it was, that's a bill. Apparently that is makes your entire catalog worth $1 billion. So good on them, man. I mean, what the fuck?
Unbelievable.
Gotta give them their propers, right?
You do.
All right. Moving along. So how do you feel about Tenacious D? Are you a Tenacious D fan?
I don't know any of their songs, but it's funny, when we bought the car, we had Sirius for like the first month or whatever for free. And I was listening to Howard Stern, and he had Tenacious D like in the studio. And I was struck by what a great singer Jack White actually is. Black, but I was just bummed out that everything
that's Jack Black, by the way.
Did I say Jack
Black? Jack White is the other dude.
White, black, whatever. Jack Black. The guy's a great singer. And
yeah, he really is.
A great performer. I was just bummed out that everything he's singing about is ridiculous.
So they're going on tour this fall. I honestly, I would pay to see them live. I've seen some live stuff that they've done on YouTube. You are 100% right. He is an amazing vocalist. Oh God, the other dude, just drawn a blank on me now.
Meg White.
Yeah. The other dude is a really good guitar player, by the way, too. And their shows their shows are ridiculously entertaining. Even their funny songs are really well done, well written, and well executed. Here's my question.
Ooh.
They are largely a comedic band, though, even though they're super talented. They've been doing this for a really long time, probably what, 30 years now or something like that. Are they helping rock or are they hurting rock?
I'm gonna say that rock and roll as a genre is in such dire straits that anybody out there who's acting as an ambassador, even if they're doing it ironically, is beneficial, because the genre is on life support, dying a slow death. So I will fall, it might surprise you, but I'll fall onto the side of, because he's an ambassador, he's famous, he did the School of Rock movies, he does all this, he did all that shit with Dio, he shows up at Eddie Trunk's bowl-a-thons to raise money for cancer awareness for Wendy Dio. He's a huge ambassador for rock and roll, for heavy metal. His tongue often is often firmly planted in cheek, but his fandom of the genre is sincere. And so I'm going to come down and say Jack Black. Thank you for supporting rock and roll. We'll take it.
I was hoping you'd say that, because I definitely feel the same way. Listen, we need more people like him. What is my biggest complaint? I've said it 1,000 times. What is my biggest complaint about rock music? It's not fun to listen to anymore. Somehow during the last 30 years, the fun got taken out of rock. And what does Tenacious D do? They are, and really, you're right, man. I mean, I don't think there's a bigger fan of rock than maybe Jack Black. And they are probably the biggest fans of rock and roll. And they're making rock and roll fun and entertaining, and it's exactly what should happen. And making it fun and entertainment and a little bit funny too, and writing like Tribute, which is a fucking hilarious song, and it's well executed and well written, by the way. The Pick of Destiny movie is cheesy as fuck, but I loved it. But this is the kind of stuff that makes young kids like rock and roll, because it's fun and it's funny and the songs are funny. And by the way, they're rock too. And so now they like Tenacious D, which makes them more interested in what's influencing Tenacious D. So then they start to like rock and roll too. So I couldn't be happier that Tenacious D even exists in the first place. And I'm super happy that they're going on tour this fall. And if they come around here and I can swing tickets, I'm probably going to want to go. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a guy who got a BJ from a hooker while Dimebag Darrell sat there and watched it happen. That's right. We're going to be talking to Ace Frehley. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth, versus Metallica. In season 2, went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts or visit battleofthebandspod.com.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted under the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, gang, welcome back. This is the part of the episode where I will refer to myself in the third person for the rest of this episode. Scott, feel free to join me in this. So from now on, Rico is going to give you the autopsy report. So this is Rock Soldiers by Fraley's Comet, Ace Frehley, 1987, Right Track Studio in New York. Everything was done in New York, it looks like. The length of this song is right in the sweet spot of radio airplay. Produced by Eddie Kramer. Nice. Ace Frehley, John Zalula. And there you go, Scott. Fraley's Comet.
Thank you, Rico. Scott needs to introduce the autopsy portion of the show right now. It's Rock and Roll Autopsy. It's Ace Frehley, Frehley's Comet, the song Rock Soldiers. We've got proprietary science. We use it judiciously. We understand how to use it. Don't try this at home, kids. You'll hurt yourselves.
You mean Scott and Rico use this?
Thank you.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page here.
We've got five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, the song is Rock Soldiers. The artist, Fraley's Comet. The category, gratuitous boomerism. How do you score, sir?
So before we get started, you know, part of part of the scientific method which we employ here, which Scott and Rico employ here at Rock and Roll Autopsy Laboratories, part of the scientific method is occasionally using the scientific method on the scientific method and maybe tweaking some of the science. So we've kind of landed on this anyways, but I just want to make sure that, you know, as we start posting our science to, you know, scholarly journals, that the science is documented. So when we're giving the obligatory 0.5 for boomerism and whiteness, right? So I want to make sure that the science is above table, clearly documentable. So my suggestion, and like I said, I think we've already landed on this anyways, is that it's just a 0.5, not I'm giving it the obligatory 0.5 and you giving it the obligatory 0.5. It's just a 0.5 obligatory. And then we have another point and a half to play with. You see what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is if I'm feeling it, I roll with it. Does that sound super scientific?
Dude, science. So like boomerism, Ace Frehley is 150 years old. He clearly gets the obligatory 0.5 for boomerism. So now that leaves us with a point and a half to play with. So if I, for example, want to up that to a 1, then you've got your full 1 to play with. Does that make sense? Or I can leave it. You see what I'm saying? So instead of having 2 points to play with, we've got a point. And if we both give them a point and a half or a half point for obligatory, I feel like that's being a little too heavy handed. And so I want to read. Are you okay with the science?
You can score it a 0. I don't care what you got to score it, how you interpret the science. You have to do it how you feel. You don't have to give it a 0.5. I'll take care of that. You can do whatever you need to do.
I'm just accommodating the publishers and the editors of the journals that we're going to be putting this stuff in. So I've, by the way, this is getting a full 1.0 for boomerism. For me, there is nothing not boomerism about this song. I'm just gonna tell you that right now. So go ahead, you go.
You have to think of it this way. If we had a guest on here at some point and they were scoring it, I wouldn't tell them how to score it. I'd let them make their own interpretations. So absolutely. I think that we each analyze the songs individually and then at the end they're tallied up. But right. So I mean, you take that however you wish. Listen, we're using science, but it's slippery, man. Gratuitous boomerism. Yeah, dude, Ace Frehley, born in 51, 72 years old. I mean, this is boomer shit from way back. You're talking about, I mean, the guys that are in this band, we've got fuckers from the David Letterman band in here. You know, this is boomer stuff. So yeah, for me, this is just even the title Rock Soldiers couldn't Holy be Christ. More 80s or more Ugh. Boomerific. It's a full 1 for me.
Yeah. By the way, lyrics written by Chip Taylor, and we'll get to that anyway. So I failed to disclose that in my autopsy report. So Chip Taylor, lyric writer. So anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, let's move on. Speaking of lyrics, we'll move on to category 2, where we typically look at some lyrics, and that category is excessive misogyny. Rico, I have lyrics available if you'd like to hear them.
I would like to hear them.
It was back in the summer of 83. There's a reason I remember it well. I was slipping and sliding, drinking and driving, bringing me closer to hell. And the devil sat in the passenger's side of DeLorean's automobile. He said, "Hey, Frehley, Frehley, let's not be silly. There's a life out there to steal. Rock soldiers come and rock soldiers go, and some hear the drum and some never know. Rock soldiers, how do we know? Ace is back and he told you so." You all right over there, buddy? Okay, yeah, we've lost Rico. He's doubled over in laughter. I'm gonna score.
Okay, so before we go any further,
do you need me to read any more lyrics, Rico?
I think I'm good. Right. Can you tell me some hear the drum and some never know? Can you please tell me what the fuck that means? Like, I'm still trying to get I'm trying to understand where they're going with that line. Some hear the drum and some never know. What the fuck does that mean?
I have no clue. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the song is pretty obvious that he's telling the tale of a car accident he was in while driving drunk, but I don't know what's that to me. That's just rock and roll poetry right there.
God damn. So the what you're referring to is in 1983, he apparently was pulled over for being an idiot and decided to take off, and he went on a police chase, and he wound up hitting a car. Like, he says he bumped the car, but he went on this police chase, and eventually he got caught and arrested, and he got out on $500 bail, and nothing ever happened. It, yet again, a case of, what was that? Rock and roll celebrities committing crimes and getting away with it.
Can I stop you for a second in the middle of your portion? I actually found an archived article from a news article from when that happened.
Nice.
Let me just skim it for you. White Plains, New York. Paul David Ace Frehley, lead guitarist of the rock group Kiss, posted $500 bond Monday on drunken and reckless driving charges and was released from jail. Frehley, 32, was involved in a minor accident Saturday in his $25,000 DeLorean sports car and afterward led police on a high-speed chase through White Plains, Police Sergeant Martin Agan said. Police approached the guitarist near Bank and Main Streets in White Plains after they found him in his car, apparently arguing with the driver of the car he had struck.
Jesus Christ.
Frehley raced off at speeds up to 90 miles per hour, Egan said. And here we go. After going south a few miles, the rock star turned around and headed north, driving around a roadblock that was set up to stop him, police said. So they actually
set up a roadblock. Jesus Christ.
Police lost Frehley shortly after he eluded the roadblock, but were contacted 20 minutes later by a driver who said he saw Frehley leaving a beat-up car less than 1 mile from the scene of the accident. Police arrived and arrested him. Authorities said no one was injured during the chase, but several drivers reported their vehicles were hit by Frehley.
Oh, my God, dude. And I mean, we know he was a big drinker, but how coked up do you think he was when this happened?
Thanks for saying this. Talk about wanton whiteness. Yeah, he was coked up to no end. This guy's...
Holy Christ.
The booger sugar was running rampant.
Oh, my God. And he got on $500 bond, and nothing really ever wound up happening to him. How about that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and then but he wrote a song about it.
And then he wrote a song about it. Can I quote Ace Frehley? Like, can I loosely quote him? Here's what he says.
Do whatever you want.
I never learned how to play guitar. I'm completely self-taught, never took a lesson. I don't even know how to read music, and I'm one of the most famous guitar players in the world. Go figure. You know what's funny about that? He's probably right.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he's arguably one of the most influential guitar players ever, you know.
Probably, and we'll get to that. But yeah, what category are we in now? We're this, okay.
Excessive massage.
Excessive massage. Yeah, dude, there's not even really a mention of females in this song at all. Although, I mean, he did like to get BJs from hookers in front of friends. I don't think that constitutes misogyny, so to speak. I mean, she's just trying to pay the bills by doing that. So I got to give this a zero, man. I don't know how you feel about it, but it's going to get a zero for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's clear there's no mention of women in here at all.
Right.
So it's clearly a zero. Let's
no mention of women, but soldiers only. Lots of soldiers.
Lots of soldiers who can't hear the drum.
Wait a minute. Before we move on, speaking of lyrics, the whole rock soldiers thing where the singer is talking to the rock soldiers and kind of, you know, getting them on board with his message, so to speak. Do you think that's meant to be for the Kiss Army?
Ooh.
Rock soldiers, Kiss Army. Do you think that they're speaking to the Kiss fans?
Maybe Ace was trying to build his own militia, right? Because the Kiss Army, Paul, when he left Kiss, Paul and Gene got to keep the army, right? I mean, I was in the army. So, I mean, I was with Kiss still. I was in the Kiss Army. But maybe he was trying to, when it says calling rock soldiers, he's calling over to the Kiss Army saying, come join Frehley's Comet. Come join our army.
I think that song is speaking to current Kiss fans, trying to get them to jump ship, if you know what I mean.
And that's why he says, "Hey, rock soldiers, how do we know Ace is back? And he told you so." So he's saying, "I'm back. So I know you were following me just as much as you were following Paul and Gene. Come on over to my camp. I've got the guy from Letterman on drums."
Yeah, well, that dude from Letterman was fucking amazing. And I feel bad that he had to suffer through this album, because he's really... Anton Figg is who we're speaking of. Some of you might remember the most dangerous... What is it called? The most dangerous band in the world?
The world's most dangerous band. Paul Schaefer.
David Letterman, man. That band was superb. And Anton Figg played the drums in that band. So that'll give you guys some reference on who that dude is.
Category 3, Wanton Whiteness, Rock Soldiers by Fraley's Comet. Rico, how do you score?
Christ, I mean... I'm skipping the obligatory 0.5 and just going for a full one on this one. I mean, he is like Ace Frehley is like the poster child for white annoying New Yorker, which I listened to it. Not mind you, I say that, but I love Ace Frehley. Kiss was my first favorite band growing up, and my favorite person in my first favorite band was Ace Frehley. So I have a little spot in my heart for this dude. But having said that, like after listening to some interviews, I listened to an interview with a guy who wrote a book about him, who was a former business partner, and some other things that I've read. I completely understand how him and Paul and Gene clash, because he's got the type of personality that's easy to clash with. And even back in the day when he was a mess, like the one guy was saying how he just used to fucking borrow money from people all the time, because that's just all he ever did, was just like he owed some dude 70 grand. He owed this other guy like $100,000 just from borrowing money from everybody. So having said that, this is the whitest of the white, dude. He is super white. The song is super white. The genre is super, super white. Everything about this, there's nothing not white about this. I mean, the closest you can get to maybe not white is his kind of half pentatonic licks that he goes through, which is kind of blues based. So, but that's a stretch. So it's going to get a full 1.0 for me on whiteness. That's a very long winded answer. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got to agree with you. I got to give it a full one as well. And if you watch the video from back in the day, yeah, dude, this is, listen, I love Ace Frehley, and his solo record from the four that came out when Kiss released their solo albums all at one time, his is far and away the best one, in my opinion. Most people think that it's either him or Paul who did the best one. I love Frehley's like song contributions to Kiss. I love Kiss. I love his guitar playing. And even that's somewhat controversial. A lot of people think he's like, you know, too simple, too kind of like caveman. But I'm a fan. I'm a fan of, you know what the funny thing is about listening to this record, Rico? Is that when Ace Frehley is singing, the songs are infinitely more interesting than when that rhythm guitar player sings. The rhythm guitar player, the songs he sings, he's just like typical 80s rock guy. And the songs become like kind of hard to get through. But when Ace is singing, the songs have character because he's a character, right?
And I always thought that when the couple of songs that he did with Kiss, like he did, what did he do?
Shock Me.
And I always thought he has a unique voice that I always wanted to hear more of. And so right. I agree with you. The songs that he is on vocally are more entertaining than the other ones. So yeah, you're right on that.
Yeah, the other ones just sound like stock 80s butt rock when they have that guy who can actually sing. Here's my advice to youngsters out there who are thinking about getting into the rock and roll business. Get a great drummer, and when it comes to a singer, don't twist yourself into a pretzel trying to get a great singer. Get a singer who has character, but don't get a singer who's like traditionally a good singer. It'll make you more interesting. One of the reasons why rock and roll is dying is there are no characters fronting rock bands anymore. It's like they come off an assembly line. Okay.
Yeah.
I would rather have Ace Frehley, as limited as his vocal abilities are, I'd rather have him singing than the guy who can sing circles around him, because Ace, his character makes the songs more interesting and makes them stand out. It doesn't sound like stock 80s butt rock when he's singing. I like the songs he sings.
Completely agree. The only thing you have to worry about is that your singer can sing on key. That's all you need to worry about. Everything else, just character, and that he can sing in key and not be tone deaf. You and then you got yourself a winner versus somebody who's got super, super duper pipes and is just super stale. Don't do that. All you need is character and that they can sing in key, and that's it. You'll be fine.
Category 4, Rock Soldiers by Frehley's Comet. Malignant Machismo. Rico, how do you score?
Oh my God. And dude, you know where Rico's going with this, right? Anybody who refers to themselves in the third person gets an automatic 1.0 for me on this one. So Rico is scoring this one a 1.0.
Well, and not only does he refer to himself, okay, it's in the chorus, Ace is back and he told you so, but it's even in the verse where he's like, hey, Frehley, Frehley, let's not be silly. He tries to rhyme Frehley and silly. A little bit
of my God.
Remember the old Letterman bit where he would do top 10 lists? And one of the top 10 lists that he would go to would be, periodically, he would do top 10 words that almost rhyme. And Frehley and silly is one of those. Another one, famously, he did a top 10 list where it was top 10 words that almost rhyme. And you know what the number one was?
What?
Peas and nurse.
Peas and nurse. Peas and nurse. Listen, let me just say that at any point in time, anybody could dial up a David Letterman episode on YouTube, and that'll be the best television you've watched all week. And it doesn't matter what episode you dial up, just dial up one. If you can find some with Chris Elliott, even better. But just watch one. It doesn't even matter who it is.
NBC Letterman. He changed when he went to CBS and went against Leno face-to-face, head-to-head at 11:30. But the old 12:30 to 1:30 a.m. Letterman that was on NBC in the 80s was hysterical.
Oh God, you got to hit not the CBS version. The NBC version is just superb. Anyway, what's your score on this one?
Well, Malignant Machismo. Yeah. I mean, listen, this is a guy bragging about drinking and driving, which doesn't fly in 2023 in the era of Uber and Mad. We've pretty much almost eliminated drinking and driving. It's one of those things. It's almost like cigarettes. It's been so kind of like demonized in the culture and so frowned upon that you would never even admit to doing it. But in 1987, 88, when the song came out, he's literally bragging about drinking and driving.
Yeah, right? I mean, he claims it's an anti-drug song, but I'm not feeling that necessarily.
But he's glamorizing it because in a sense, if you think about it, he's the guy who was kicked out of the band, right? So he's the bad boy, whereas Gene and Paul are like Boy Scouts and he's the bad boy. He drank too much for Kiss. And so he's really embracing the bad boy image here. He's sitting in a DeLorean drunk with the devil in the passenger seat. I mean, he's literally embracing this bad boy image, right? He's such a bad boy, he runs from police, right?
Right, totally.
So what could be more macho than that? He's got, listen to this line, with a trooper in the mirror and Satan on my right. Wow. We went the wrong way down a one-way road, hitting everything in sight. So he's such a badass that he's got the police in the mirror and Satan sitting in the passenger seat and driving the wrong way on a one-way street. That's how hardcore he is, man. Is there anything more macho than that? And then he's just bragging about it, right?
That's fucking straight up metal, dude.
Now here's where the lesson comes in. This is the moral. Remember G.I. Joe in the 80s, or no, He-Man, when the last
He-Man.
Yeah, the kicker was the little moral thing.
Yeah, the little coda at the end where they would come in and tell the lesson.
Well, here's the He-Man moment in Rock Soldiers where he says, "I cried, I am invincible since I was high above the law, but my only high was just a lie, and now I'm glad I saw." So that's the moment when he comes out as like Prince Adam in the purple leotard at the end of He-Man.
And like the man bob hairdo.
Yeah. And he gives the moral of the song. So he puts you through all this where he's just bragging about being shit-faced and driving around town, plowing into innocent bystanders with the devil. And now we get to the moral part.
He's like,
"But my only
man.
High was just a lie. Now I'm it's glad like,
hey,
I
man,
saw.
It's not real. It's all fucking fake. Don't be like me. Do what I say, not as I do." Right? Remember that? That's boomerism right there. That's boomerism. Do what I say, not as I do. How many times did you hear that?
That's how we were raised. That's what parenting was in the 80s.
Jesus,
I'm gonna sit here and get drunk and run over innocent bystanders, but don't do what I do.
Don't do what I do. Children should be seen and not heard, and do what I say and not as I do.
But Ace, why
don't
are
grab
you getting-
me a beer?
Why are you getting drunk and driving recklessly and running over innocent bystanders? It looks like fun.
Do as I say, not as I do.
I'm giving it a one. Let's move on. The last category for Fraley's Comet, Rock Soldiers, Culture Vulturism. Rico, how do you score?
Where do I begin, Scott? Okay. Let's go... Let's go. Gosh, you could start anywhere. Beginning of the song is clearly you know where I'm going with this. Beginning of the song is clearly a Charlie Daniels ripoff from Devil Went Down to Georgia. The style of the song itself is cheesy 80s rock, there's nothing unique about the style of music. In fact, the entire album is just reminiscent of stale 80s hair band music with a little bit of pop metal thrown in there. If you watch the video with like the camera going up and down the aisles of the kids marching, that is fucking, that's the wall, right? That's the video from the wall right there. So there's that. There was one other thing I wanted to mention. Anyway, while I'm thinking, I'm going to give it a one. I'm going to think of what I wanted to say. 1.0, what's your score? And I'm going to think about what I forgot.
So you broke it down to like literally every element of this song is derivative of something else. We should mention that we owe apparently Ace Frehley's resurrection from being jettisoned from Kiss to one, a young up-and-coming whippersnapper in the record industry, one Eddie Trunk, who was working as an A&R rep for Megaforce Records, who famously signed Metallica when they had Acne. He went to those folks and said, "You know who would be a great person for us to get on our roster? Ace Frehley." And Rody was like, "That guy's washed up. Why are you pimping him? He's gone. He was shit-faced. He's toast. He embarrassed himself on Tom Snyder. They replaced him with some fucking shreddy guy, Vinnie Vincent and all this shit." And he constantly lobbied for, he's a star. He just needs a platform. You got to get it. And since then, Eddie Trunk and Ace Frehley are still buds. And I think Eddie invited Ace to his wedding and they're buddies, and Eddie resurrected his career. So
yeah,
we would be remiss if we failed to mention the fact that Ace kind of owes this. We owe the existence of this record we've been making fun of to Eddie Trunk.
God, I mean, doesn't Ace really owe the fact that he's been able to pay his bills for the last 40 years to Eddie Trunk? I mean, boy, did that guy just continues even to this day to pimp and lift up Ace Frehley. And man, he has not backed down from his love of Ace Frehley. I gotta give it to him. I mean, at least he's stayed consistent over the last 40 years or 30, 40 years, but man, he owes Eddie Trunk huge for the, really the second half of his life. Really. If you think about it,
Eddie Trunk is literally at war with Gene and Paul because Tommy Thayer wears Ace's makeup.
Ace Frehley gets money for that too. He gets royalties on his makeup. I believe he gets paid for that. Holy Christ.
I just love the fact that like 60-year-old men being upset about Kiss makeup is just the best ever. I don't know why.
I could not add to that. That was very well said and silly at the same time.
Oh, culture vulturism. So, Rico, you laid out the fact that, yes, we hear the devil goes down to Georgia. There's nothing... And we're like at this point with Fraley's comment, we are like what at 87, 88 by the time this thing comes out, right?
87, right? Oh, yeah. I know the other thing I wanted to mention.
Go ahead.
Where like in Def Leppard, where it sounds like there's 70 people all singing the same thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Like the layered chorus thing.
Yeah, there's that in there too. That's the other thing that I wanted to mention. The Def Leppard layered chorus effect and the vocals. There's that in there too.
Yeah, it's a great point. So literally every signature element of the song and video is derivative of something of the era. And I think when you get to be by 87, man, you are long in the tooth. I mean, hair metal is over by 87. You have Guns N' Roses are out. You're into dirty LA sleaze rock at this point. And which takes us back
to the news element, the Proclaimers, and I Will Walk 500 Miles, which is anything but an 80s song, came out the same year that this song came out.
Wow. Yeah, so it feels like it's a little late in the game, right? And so derivative of everything at this point, trying to like get a foot in the market. There are parts of this record. I did listen to the whole record. There are songs on here that remind me of like they sound like Kiss songs, you know? And so there are some songs, not this one, but there are other songs on the record that very much just kind of remind me of like, oh, that could be a Kiss track. That sounds like, Look It Up or something, you know?
Totally.
So I listened to the whole, Your Rock on here. Sounds like,
oh
like
my it could have been,
like been on Lick It Up.
Oh my God. These songs, I was like, as I was listening to the album earlier at work today and I texted Scott, like literally as I was listening to this album, I was chuckling out loud at how cheesy this and at the time you don't think of it in those terms, but how cheesy this album is and how fucking cheesy the lyrics are. I mean, it was the most entertaining half an hour of my life, I have to say.
All right, I'm gonna score it a 1 as well. You sold me, and there's really, I thought briefly about giving it a 0.5 and then I scratched it out because you literally laid out like 75 examples of vulturism. So I think I have to kind of buy into it as if they were my own ideas. All right, Rico, let's tally this mug up. Okay. What do you got?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3. I've got 4 points. 4 points.
And I've got 4 points for a grand total of
8 points. Sorry, Ace. You killed rock, baby.
How do you feel about this? Is it okay with you?
Science, dude. It's, you know, there's no room. Let me just remind all of our one or two listeners out there that might be listening. There's no room in this podcast for opinions. This is hard fucking science. So if a song killed rock and it happened to be by an artist that I liked as a kid, dude, science. It is what it is. There's no room for my emotions in science.
Can I let you in on a dirty little secret?
Yeah.
I kind of like this song.
It stuck with me the rest of the day too. It did. It's
goofy. It's dated, I know, but it's got some charm to it. And when Ace is singing, I like his goofy character kind of driven vocal thing that he does.
I'm not gonna lie. It has that just that level of cheesiness that sticks, that makes it kind of hooky and kind of sticks with you. So yeah, I totally agree with you. It stuck with me too.
So check this out. Guess I learned something now that the autopsy is over. Let's have a little digression here. I learned something while reading about Fraley's Comet. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, I do.
How do you say Ace Frehley?
Holy cow. Well, the H is where things get a little kooky, right? So I would say Frehley, like A, like a long A sound, Frehley, like Frehley. That's
check this
clearly
out.
Not that might, that's probably not right though.
No, I think most people say it like Frehley, like yeah. like freedom, right? Like Frehley.
Yeah. yeah.
Ace Frehley. Frehley, yeah. Frehley. But I didn't know this, but check it out. It says this is from Wiki, so we can take it with a grain of salt, but I think it's interesting. It says the band name was a pun of a pun. Bill Haley and his Comets was a 1950s rock and roll band that derived its name as a pun of the typical mispronunciation of Haley's Comet, properly pronounced Halley, as in rhymes with valley, but commonly mispronounced as Haley, a comet which orbits the sun near Earth about every 75 years. It also helped people pronounce Frehley's name properly to connect it to the common mispronunciation of Halley as Haley, as in Frehley. So the proper pronunciation is Frehley, like you had first said. So it would be Frehley's Comet, which would rhyme with Haley's Comet, which is a mispronunciation because it's really Halley's Comet. Wow, are you getting with all this?
I am picking up what you're putting down, and wow, that's pretty fucking interesting, actually, that the most uniquely creative thing on the album is the name of the band, but
because everyone mispronounces his name as Frehley.
Everybody says
Frehley.
Yeah. Well, and for forever, that's how I used to say Ace Frehley. But then as I got older and more aged, I started saying Frehley more, Ace Frehley. But yeah, I say Frehley too all the time, even now.
So I was like, okay, well, how do people say this? And I thought, I've always said Ace Frehley my whole life. And then I pulled up like interviews and I thought, well, who would know better? It's got to be Eddie Trunk, right? This guy who pulled him out of obscurity. And Eddie Trunk all over that metal show, clip after clip, is calling him Ace Frehley, often when Ace Frehley is in the room with him. Wow. You know, so he's not pronouncing it right in front of the man. So then I pulled up audio of Ace Frehley saying his name himself while hosting a Headbangers Ball. And you know what he said?
But
Ace Frehley.
Frehley. So he says his name the right way.
Yes. But isn't it funny that they I thought that was a funny little thing.
Probably like, people been mispronouncing it for 50 years or so. Who cares at this point in time?
I never knew. I mean, I literally learned this like this afternoon.
And I think that the whole Frehley's Comet thing, the story behind that is honestly super fucking cool, man. That's a cool story.
Yeah. And it's cool. We always talk about, it's cool when you tie things back to the history of rock and roll. So Bill Haley and his Comets, which was really Halley, rhymes with Valley. Anyway.
Right.
Halley's Comet. I didn't know that. I always called it Haley's Comet.
Yeah, Halley's, me too.
Halley rhymes with Valley.
Yeah,
no
knows?
Idea. And as far as the H in his name, there's so many weird instances of letters being silent and in names that I never gave two shits about it. You know,
it's true. That's pretty fascinating, dude. I love it. You know what?
We
bang on this guy, but we're both Ace Frehley fans. We're both Kiss fans. I'm still a Frehley fan, even though he's been a train wreck for the first half of his life and had to get bailed out by Eddie Trunk and is just trying to, you know, make a living. I still love the dude. I love him. I love him for who he is.
Yeah,
sure.
Agreed, man. And as a member of the Kiss Army, would you be willing to jump ship and join the militia that Ace was trying to assemble, the rock soldiers?
Man, I don't know if I could go that far. Like once you're in the army, dude, you're just always in the army, aren't you?
Yeah, I feel like I would have to give my life for Paul or Gene. Like I'd have to jump in front of a bullet, you know.
Yeah, that's asking a little too much, I think. Hey, so yeah, I don't think I could do that.
So you would just let a bullet hit Ace?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I just, sorry, bud. I love you, but I got to draw the line on leaving the army because that's just not happening.
Would you jump in front of a bullet for Eric Singer or Tommy Thayer? They're in Kiss.
Yeah, they're in Kiss, man. They're part of the executive of Kiss. So yeah, you kind of have to. You just do it. And when you're in the army, you don't ask questions. You just follow orders.
All right, we better knock it off before Gene Simmons sends us a bill for mentioning Kiss so many times in this episode. All right, gang, this has been Rock and Roll Autopsy. Hope you had fun tonight. We look forward to seeing you next week. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
Guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, love it to the morning. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNRAutopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.